Mainstream Mental Health Radio
with Dr. John Huber.
What do you think you are, crazy or something?
Well, you're not.
We're on a mission from God.
News, issues revolving around mental health.
Dr. John Huber, a mental health professional for over 20 years, the chairman for Mainstream Mental Health, a clinical forensic psychologist, and a psychology professor at Texas State University. Breaking the silence of mental health, one day at a time, discussing the human condition, providing a sounding board for mental health issues, and making mental health mainstream.
You got a gift, my friend.
Now it's time for Mainstream Mental Health Radio.
Let the healing begin.
With Dr. John Huber.
All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show. I'm your host, Dr. John Huber. Thanks very much for listening, as we really do appreciate it. Now, we have another amazing day scheduled for everybody, and I hope your day has already been amazing. And remember to check out our website at mainstreammentalhealth.org and let your friends know all about our show. You can follow us on our podcast at blogtalkradio.com/mainstreammentalhealth. Or just Google us at Mainstream Mental Health Radio, and we should pop right up there. All right, let's look at our news stories of the week. Now, we all know that we've talked about stress and anxiety and depression here at Mainstream Mental Health Radio several times. And, you know, this is, by the way, our 25th show, so I think we're moving ahead and getting better every week. But we got some interesting things that came out of the Huffington Post this week. 10 weird signs you're stressed out. And one of the weird signs that they came up with, number one actually on the list, is that your muscles are throbbing. You have a strained neck, tight shoulders, and a lot of times we realize that that's stress. Another thing that can happen is headaches, and that's pretty common for a lot of people. And so, you know, I don't know exactly how weird those are in the whole scope of things. We know that a lot of times that over-the-counter pain medications can help with both of those. You know, a little ibuprofen here, maybe a little stretching, things like that. But if we get into doing something like yoga, we're actually doing some of the techniques that mental health professionals think help relieve stress. So you're doing the right things. And if you can keep from having to reach for the medicine cabinet, that's even better. I recommend that my patients work out and do things like that on a regular basis. Yoga is really nice. But some of the other things that are kind of interesting that we may not realize are signs that we're having a stressed out day. One of them is you're thirsty. And when you feel anxious, it can actually cause your adrenal glands. These are located on top of your kidneys to pump out stress hormones that create an equilibrium balance in your water and salt content in your body, and it causes you to become thirsty. So that's a big sign that you could be stressed if all of a sudden you're really thirsty. Another one is you start sweating a lot. And, you know, if you think about people get clammy hands, a lot of times it's because your hands are sweating. We know that when you're anxious, you get stage fright, for example, your hands can get clammy, you start sweating, your armpits get damp. And a lot of us already know what that is. One of the things, number five on the Huffington Post list that they brought up, is your hair starts falling out. That's kind of crazy, but the reality of it is that shedding actually happens when you get stressed out. And that alone can, for a lot of us, cause more stress, and it becomes a revolving door, and we just increase that level of stress, increases the amount of hair falling out, and those of us that are a little vain start worrying about that, creating more stress and more hair falling out. So it's a vicious cycle there. Another one can be that you're going to the bathroom a lot. You have lots of stomach problems. Usually, you know, butterflies in your stomach are associated with having anxiety or stage fright again, but if you have lots of frequent urges to go to the bathroom, you might want to consider going and getting yourself a stress checkup and see how things are going. Go talk to your therapist, your psychologist. Another thing, number seven on their list, is you're just not really feeling yourself. And what do we know about stress? Well, stress lowers our defense mechanisms as far as our immune system is concerned. So you seem to be getting sniffles all the time and kind of have that little cough. You could be experiencing stress that's lowering your effectiveness of your immune system, makes you more vulnerable to common colds and runny noses and things like that. Another thing that causes or is a sign of stress is actually tooth troubles. Your jaws hurt. Some people talk about TMJ. Not everybody's jaws are perfectly shaped, but a lot of people don't ever have any problems with them until they start experiencing stress. And when they sleep at night, they're clenching their teeth, they're grinding their teeth, and it just wears that joint out and causes a lot of extreme pain. I have friends that are dentists, and one of the things that they talk about to me is how they can tell which patients of theirs are stressed out. So that is very much an important thing to be aware of. One of the things that stress also does is it affects your ability to encode information and retrieve information. So what am I talking about? I'm talking about difficulty overall in being able to remember things effectively and encode information in your memory, okay? So pay attention if you misplace your keys too often, if you have spotty recall, those types of things. You start thinking about, oh, that actor, I can't remember that. You know, tip of the tongue syndrome, chronic stress can cause that. It can participate in your not being able to remember things spatially, and it affects specifically parts of your mind that help you remember locations and objects and other mundane items. And in particular for me, it's names. I lose names a lot of times. All right, that's out of the Huffington Post. Another article that we've seen is kind of interesting. We see some depression treatments using an unusual medication. And what we've seen is research into ketamine. Now, if you know ketamine, if you're a veterinarian, you know that it's basically a horse tranquilizer. But using it in a controlled fashion, it appears that it can actually be effective at ending depression, not just controlling it. It sounds like they think that if you use it appropriately, that it can be effective in getting rid of that. What they've done is they looked at a total of 16 patients. Now, these were all geriatrics, and this is significant because a lot of the medications we use in middle age and younger aren't very well tolerated with people who are, you know, over the age of 60, and it becomes problematic. So they looked at 16 patients over the age of 60, many of whom suffer from depression for years, if not decades, and found that other treatments were ineffective, were given a low-dose treatment of ketamine. And over a period of 5 weeks, they slowly increased those doses, and with each dose being tailored specifically for each patient, period. The results were published in the latest American Journal of Geriatric Psychiatry and provided preliminary evidence that ketamine itself is effective as an antidepressant when delivered in repeated intravenous doses. So we don't have to worry about one of the things we have to deal with geriatric a lot of is GERD, gastro reflux issues. And if we're giving them intravenous doses, that's not something we have to worry about. So it's another good treatment for them. And what the researcher, Professor Colleen Liu, she stated, we noticed that ketamine worked incredibly quickly and incredibly effectively. And she led the pilot program, and she actually told us in an interview with ABC News. And she said that by incredibly effective, we mean going rapidly from severe depression to being completely well in one day. And that's significant. With most SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor, we're often talking about weeks. With some of the faster ones, oftentimes we're talking about just several days to a week, maybe 2 or 3 weeks. But we're usually looking at maybe 6 weeks or so. And I think that that's incredible that they're finding this out. Now, we use ketamine in a lot of different things for children, believe it or not, because it blocks their memory and makes them able to have surgical procedures and things like that done. And it's pretty amazing how that works, that a small dose of that can be very effective for children. I want to remind everybody that you're listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio Show. My name is Dr. John Huber, and you know, we need to pay a lot of attention to what's going on in our environment and be aware, and that means staying on top of some of this research. But something that I've been asked lately is, you know, when to end a friendship. You know, how does somebody go about doing that? And we know that wrong friends can cause a lot of harm. So, you know, it's something to think about. You know, when your friend asks you, for example, to inflict a wrong on another person, you know, maybe it's time to move on and let go of that friend. So with that in mind, a lot of us have parted ways with jobs, either intentionally or unintentionally. And today our first guest is Pat Pattison, and they ask and actually coach people when they get asked, how can we present our best self in a job interview, recover from the pain of being fired, and become successful in our careers? Well, our first guest, again, is Pat Pattison, an executive and transition coach, TV host, author. As host of his Remade in America cable television show and reinvention coach, Pat Pattison teaches people how to remake their careers into the ones they've always wanted. Mr. Pattison, welcome to our program.
Well, thank you, John. I'm happy to be here. Appreciate your interest.
Well, thank you. So, you know, it's something that especially, you know, as our economic system here is kind of reinventing itself right now in the United States, What do you think are some of the ways that a person can present their best self during a job interview, especially if they've been absent from the job market for a while? What do you think people can do?
Yeah, you are right in identifying the fact that these are very unique times. You know, the 2008 financial downturn just created a buyer's market in terms of the job market.
Yes.
And it continues to be that in terms of what the competition is out there. And I think that people that struggle in this area, one of the main things they can start doing is to kind of almost go internal and figure out what their story is. What is their unique value? I call it a value-added proposition that they're going to bring to a job interview. You know, they may be one of many applicants, and I have a past life of being a creative executive at the Disney Studios, and so I was on the other side of this. I would hire a lot of people, and so I took a lot of notes as how people presented themselves, and it's pretty bad a lot of the time. So if somebody can bring in, you know, and really be specific as to what they are bringing to the table, no matter what the job is, whether it's being a taxi driver or a brain surgeon. You know, what is it that you bring to this specific job opportunity? So you start there.
I think that's kind of the key. I mean, I know with my undergraduate students, as they're looking at interviewing for graduate school, I said, look, everybody's resume is going to look the same. Their transcripts are very much the same. You have to stand out, and not in a, since you were in Disney, not in a Mickey Mouse kind of way.
Exactly. Well, and that's actually a unique story in the sense that when I got hired at Disney, I had grown up in Orange County and went to Disneyland quite a bit, was quite a Disney fan. And so when I came up, the headhunter came after me for the Disney Studios. Just the fact that I could talk in a very educated way about Disney things made me stand out as a candidate. So,
wow.
So the other step in this is to not assume everything's about work, you know, not assume that what people are going to find interesting about you is just you can do this software well, or you have this specific skill. Sometimes it might be a hobby you have, or it might be just the fact that you're a creative thinker, or you're well-read. You know, there's just other things that we bring to the table other than our specific vocational skills.
Wow. And that's important because, you know, it's amazing how people's outside life enhances their marketing skills in their business world. So that kind of leads me to, what do you think are some of the more mental qualities of people who are very successful in their careers?
Well, I think if you can start from a place of being of service, you're always going to have a leg up over somebody that's in it for themselves. So no matter what you are going in to interview for or to present, whether it's a job or whether maybe you have your own business and you want to attract clients, you know, if you can think in terms of what problem am I going to solve for this potential employer or this client, how can I help them? I always say that rather than talking a lot, you should listen. And by listening, usually people are going to give a clue as to what their current anxiety is. You know, if you're sitting in a, you know this as a professional, if you're sitting in a office with an executive, a phone call might come in that, where they're saying, oh my God, you know, I got to get that stuff delivered. You know, it's late and whatever. And then they come back to the interview and you might say, well, you know, I know quite a bit about logistics and delivery. What's mm-hmm. the situation you're in? You know, oh, well, actually, you know, we have a tanker and it needs to be cleared in customs. And, oh, well, actually, here's what I do to do that. And boom, you're off and running. Mm-hmm. So if wow. you can be in a service mode, I think that's the best mental state you can be in versus, okay, what am I going to get out of this? You know, it's more what you're going to give.
Right, and then they value that as opposed to you're just here for a paycheck kind of mentality.
That's right.
Well, what if someone has, you know, just had, for example, a unplanned termination and they're walking into an interview? What are some things they can do to keep from dwelling on that or somehow, you know, focusing on that negative energy that just came from that last experience?
That's a great question, and that's a big problem. And I don't know that there are simple answers to that, and it comes up more and more. My coaching practice, I deal a lot with this. There are a lot of baby boomers whose jobs, either through ageism or just obsolescence, can't get rehired in what they used to do. You know,
right.
and rather than dwelling, just like you're saying, dwelling on, well, gee, isn't the world going to change and need what I know how to do again? You know, you have to be flexible. I think retraining is a real option to look at. I'm a big advocate of community colleges. It's a lot of what I talk about on the show I host. Is if you can take whatever you're doing, you know, and find out what the new piece is that will make you relevant again, take the time to go back to school a little bit. Community colleges are very affordable.
Yes.
You can get computer skills updated. You could maybe even study a whole new profession. You know, I have a friend that went back to school in her late 40s and became a nurse after being a teacher for many years, you know, and she just didn't want to teach anymore.
You know? I understand that. Well, Pat, you've given us some great advice, and, you know, I'm wanting to give them some information. How can some of my listeners, and I'm thinking that I want to know for some of my patients, how can they find out about you, and where can they do that?
Well, thank you for that. I have a website, which is Pattison, and that's spelled PATTISON.net. So PatPattison.net, and there's a way to reach me on my website, phone number and email and all that on that website. And I send out free information, chapters from my upcoming book for anybody that gets in touch.
Awesome. Well, thank you very much for being on our show today. And I'm going to forward your information to people I think could benefit from it. And I think our listeners can benefit from it in general, especially the way the economy is these days.
Yep. I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, Pat.
Okay. Take care.
Thank you. All right. Well, remind everybody, this is Mainstream Mental Health Radio, and I'm Dr. John Huber. And our next guest is something dear to my heart. I love to eat. And Stacy Chillamy has a book called The Complete Herbal Guide. And she brings up a big question. How does food impact your health and mental health? Our next guest, Stacy Chillamy, is a popularly recognizable health lifestyle reporter, expert, columnist, and a health host, author of The Complete Guide to Natural Healing and 20 other published books. And that's an amazing feat in and of itself. Stacy is the founder of The Complete Herbal Guide, and you can find that online at thecompleteherbalguide.com, which currently has over 300,000 monthly visitors. Stacy, welcome to my show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Stacy, why is food such an essential part in people's mental health?
You know, people sometimes don't realize that our body and our brain is all connected, and that our brain is always going. It's functioning day and night. And what our brains are sculpted by what we eat. You know, you really need to, think about what you put into your diet, because keeping your brain in shape is one of the more reasons to clean up your diet, because everything you put in your body affects the way you think, you feel, and you act. It's just like an expensive car. When your brain functions best, it's, you know, you think about when if you fill up your tank with regular gas compared to when you fill up your tank with premium gas, it's going to function better when you have better quality gas in the car. And the same goes for food. The better you eat, the better you're going to function mentally and physically. And, food has a big factor on how we feel and how we think. And, we really need to step back and think about what we put in our bodies, because it really does truly make a difference on how we feel and how we act on a daily basis.
That is so true. Now, Stacy, I've heard that you kind of took control of your own medical issues, and this kind of led to this. Can you kind of give us a Reader's Digest version of what happened and got you into herbal medicine and natural healing?
Sure. Yeah, I developed epilepsy at the age of 5 years old. I had a virus that had traveled to the brain. It was encephalitis, and it had caused scar tissue damage. Until this day, they still can't locate the scar tissue damage. But I was in a coma for a couple of days, and they thought I was going to be paraplegic. And when I came out of the coma, I wasn't paraplegic. I didn't have any brain damage, but I had epilepsy. And my entire life, I struggled with my epilepsy. And it was a real battle, especially when I got into college and you have those late night studying and, you know, you're under a lot of stress and, you know, it was a lot to handle. And, you know, I started to really try to find ways on, you know, how to get through this, because, you know, I wanted to live that so-called normal life. And I, you know, this disorder was really, putting a hinder on the goals I was trying to accomplish. So I had started to I wrote an article to the Epilepsy Foundation, and I asked them, you know, how do people cope with this disorder? How do they get through it? And thousands of letters poured from all over the United States and Canada. People wrote to me and told me their story.
Wow.
And how they cope with it. And I was so intrigued by it. I was really motivated, and, you know, it made me realize at that moment that, you know, I wasn't the only one, that I wasn't
mm-hmm.
alone. And, you know, there are many more out there that, you know, suffer just like I do. And I took a lot of their input and a lot of their advice, and I applied it to my own life. And I actually was still motivated because when I was trying to find information about the disorder, back then there was probably like 3 or 4 books on epilepsy, and they're written by doctors, and most of them were in medical terminology that kind of went over
right.
your head. So if you weren't a medical doctor, you had no idea what they were talking about. So, you know, I really wanted to write a book, and I started in college. You know, I started to take all the advice that these people gave me that I thought could help others, and I started to, you know, create my own regimen, my own way of living that I thought, you know, could help me. And I started, you know, I started to feel better. I changed my lifestyle. I started changing the way I ate. When I got out of college, I had started writing for an herbalist, and I was doing a lot of research, and I found different things that really, you know, I thought could help myself. And I started applying a lot of the stuff that I was learning to my own life. And I went from maybe 9 seizures a month to 4 seizures a month to 3 to 2 to none. And
wow.
I was still taking medication, but I was, you know, it was the way I was living, the foods I was eating, the way I was detoxifying my body, just my mental thoughts, how I looked at life, played a big impact on, you know, the way my seizures were and, you know, and my health.
That's amazing. So you were able to find ways to deal instead of just relying on the medication.
Yes, you know, the medication was helping me, but it wasn't controlling me and getting me to the point where
right.
I wanted to be. And a lot of those medications had side effects. I had tried almost every medication on the market, and, you know, some of them slowed your brain down. Some of them, you know, made you not, you know, act, you know, the exact way you wanted to feel. They gave you fatigue, you know, so it was a lot of drawbacks, and I didn't want to feel
right.
like this the rest of my life, and I had a lot of goals I wanted to achieve. So I started doing a lot of things naturally. I started changing my train of thought, and I, you know, I ended up writing that book about epilepsy, and I, you know, it helped a lot of people. I got a lot of positive feedback. So I started, you know, taking the stuff that I was doing for myself and applying it, and started writing books and articles. And, you know, it was great because I was not only helping myself, but I was helping thousands of other people all around the world. So it was a great achievement for myself.
Well, you know, I'm about mental health and all that kind of mental health realm there. And I know epilepsy can definitely be a significant impact on that. But what about, you know, some of my more common, you know, depression and anxiety? Are there any specific nutritional deficiencies or something that if my listeners are listening on to that they might want to check on to see if that might be beneficial to them before, of course, they go to your book?
Well, you know, I find that when I started detoxifying my body, when I started cleansing the toxins out of my body, I started noticing a decrease in my seizures. That means, you know, cleansing, you know, I started to use milk thistle. I started to incorporate more fiber into my diet. People don't realize, but a lot of the serotonin, you know, is produced and comes from the digestive tract. And, serotonin is a neurotransmitter that helps regulate sleep, appetite, mood, balance, the way we think. And it even inhibits the way we take pain and how we, you know, how we can handle things in life. And a lot of times, you know, if your body's not breaking down the nutrients and the food in your body properly, it's not feeding
right.
all those minerals and vitamins to the right places, and you're not getting what you need. So if your body and your brain, if your body can't break it down and it's not feeding the brain the right fuel, then things aren't going to work to their optimum. And so then you have to start thinking, you know, why isn't my body working the way it's supposed to? What's the root of the cause? And sometimes we need to cleanse our body, get all those toxins out, get all those you know, all that waste out of our body, so our body can refresh itself and renew itself, and so the body can actually work the way it's supposed to. And that's exactly what I did. I started to change my diet. I started to eat better foods. I cut out the sugar. You know, sugar can be especially refined sugar or ketose corn syrup. You know that. You know, everything from soda to salad dressing to yogurt to bread can increase the levels of stress hormones in our brain. And that in itself can trigger mental health problems like anxiety and depression. So, you know, we really need to think about and look at the ingredients when we're eating things, even if we think it's healthy. What's in those ingredients? What are we actually consuming in our bodies? Because our bodies are made up of hormones. So, you know, everything we eat is going to affect our hormones, and our hormones are going to affect our brain. We're all tied into one, you know. So we really have to think, you know, food plays a big role in the way we feel, the way we act. So, and for people with mental disorders and people even with epilepsy or any kind of disorder or disease, you know, what you put in your body is actually, it's going to inhibit and it's going to affect the way we, you know, the way we function, the way we feel, and, you know, even how we think, our alertness, our focus, and how we can handle these problems in the proper way. It all ties into one. So food and all this stuff, you know, plays a big role.
Well, are there any foods that you think tend to put people in better moods?
I think turkey is a very good food. It has tryptophan in it, and it's known to actually fight depression. You know, they say that walnuts is a really great food for depression, fighting depression, because when it's eaten in moderation, those nuts are really a good source of omega-3, and they support overall brain health. You know, omega-3 is a big factor in preventing brain disease. You know, nuts, seeds, you know, fatty fishes are all great foods to actually help, you know, the way you feel, depression, and other brain diseases as well. You know, when you eat low-fat dairy, you know, skim milk, yogurt, low-fat cheeses, and other dairy products rich in vitamin D and protein, these are a great source for many to help with fighting depression. You know, even green tea. You know, if people like to, you know, green tea has become very popular over the years, and its researchers have said that the components in the leaves can actually fight depression. You know, it's the in the leaves, the ingredients, it contains amino acids, and those amino acids are known to help fight depression. You know, turmeric is really good too. You know, turmeric can actually fight so many different things. It's good. It's known for so many things, and it's also known for helping depression. And even you know what? Even dark chocolate. You know, dark chocolate helps to release the serotonin, which also relaxes the blood vessels, and it also helps fight depression as well.
Wow, that just sounds like there's just so much information. How can my listeners get a hold of you and maybe ask you questions, and what's the best way to do that?
They can go right to my website, thecompleteherbalguide.com, and they can just shoot me out an email if they have any questions. You know, I'd be happy to answer anyone's emails. You know, I'm always out there to help others. So, you know, I enjoy, you know, doing what I can to, you know, help others, you know, to move a step forward in life. So, you know, just shoot me an email on my website, and I would be more than happy to answer any questions.
Well, I really do appreciate you coming on, Stacey. You've just been an amazing guest, and you're just so full of information. I could probably talk for another hour on this, but unfortunately, we have time constraints, and maybe we can get you on again later, and I'm going to go back to your website and check that out, and I know a lot of our listeners will be, too. That's definitely a reason why people follow you, so thank you very much. And I appreciate you coming on today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Okay, everyone, that concludes today's edition of Mainstream Mental Health Radio. Special thanks to our guests. And to learn about our show, come and visit us on mainstreammentalhealth.org or follow us up on Mainstream Mental Health Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you here next week for another amazing show. And remember, life is what happens while you're making plans, so buckle up.
Thanks for listening to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber. Check us out on social media, Google+, Mainstream Mental Health, Instagram, @MainstreamMentalHealth, Twitter, @MainstreamMENTL, and search for Mainstream Mental Health on Facebook. Please tune in every week to Mainstream Mental Health Radio with your host, Dr. John Huber.